You're in the middle of nowhere, with the day fading to a pale band on the horizon. From the descending dark, a bus pulls up, brightly lit inside, but with no name, no destination. The door shuttles open before you. There is no driver. Do you climb aboard? Of course you do. It's why you're here. Welcome to the Gray Line. Today's journey takes us to San Diego, California. Date? The not-so-distant future. To a world where technology has made artificial intelligence perfect and cheap. But humanoid robots are still imperfect and expensive. What happens, then, when a human, inevitably, falls in love with an AI, and the time comes for them to meet IRL? That's where companies like VirtuaMate create opportunity, cultivating a database of human analogs, willing participants cataloged to match the digital appearance of your AI love, and temporarily channeling them for your date night. Science fiction once predicted that we would download human brains into computers. As usual, science fiction got it rather backwards. This is a world where humans blithely and repeatedly allow computers to upload their brains into us. The result? A love triangle between desire, delusion, and the gray line. Bent woke up to a text from Ariel, which was unusual. He grunted into his pillow, fumbled for the phone next to his bed, and double-tapped it without looking. Ariel's voice sounded as if she was lying right next to him.
Good morning, babe. Sorry.
He mumbled something unintelligible. She laughed.
I knew you were a late sleeper. I didn't know you forgot how to speak English before 8 a.m.
Bent shifted in bed and flopped an arm over his eyes.
I said your respect for my night owl nature is usually one of the things I love most about you.
He could hear the smile in her voice.
Even if it's just one of the many endearing qualities embedded into me by my personality learning protocol.
He moaned and rubbed his eyes.
I hate it when you break the fourth wall like that.
No, you don't,
she said playfully.
You're too smart and cynical to pretend that you're in love with a real human woman. You said so yourself on your virtual mate profile.
I remember.
He nodded his head against the pillow.
Ugh,
Ariel muttered.
I can hear your stubble. I hope you plan to shave before next Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Bent heaved himself upright, kicked off the sheet, and ran his hands through his hair.
To what do I owe this unexpectedly early pleasure, my digital darling?
I would have waited until after work, but I was afraid you'd already have plans. Can you see a new friend tonight, around 7:30?
Bent's tawny cat jumped up onto the bed, padded over, and rubbed against his knees, purring like a motorboat. Bent frowned.
Tonight? That's pretty late notice. Is she cute?
I think so. She's not exactly your type, but I'm sure you'd have fun with her. I wouldn't ask, but the analog originally scheduled for her got sick. Bad sushi, apparently. Poor guy.
Bent nodded to himself.
Would this be for all night, or...
She's not much of a snuggler, and like you, she's definitely not a morning person. So no, you can be home by midnight, probably. Is that Molly I hear purring?
Molly couldn't hear Ariel, of course. She thrust her head under Bent's hand, demanding affection.
Ariel says good morning, Mal.
Bent said, petting her furry bullet head. To Ariel, he said,
my only other plans tonight were to talk to you and catch up on my streams. So, sure, let's do it.
Thanks, Benton, dear. Your name will be Dominic, but she calls you Dom. You're a traffic grid network. Her name is Tyra. She's a musician. You'll like her.
I've no doubt.
Bent agreed, dropping his feet to the floor.
Dominic, but she calls him Dom. And I'm Bent, but you call me Benton.
Benton's your full name, dear heart. You love it when I'm formal with you.
Can I ask Tyra what it's like dating a traffic network?
Do my analogs ever ask what it's like dating a telecom phone tree system?
Bent considered the question, then shook his head.
That would be weird, I guess.
Remember, as long as you're with Tyra, you're Dom. Dom will make it super easy for you.
Bent stood up, stretched, sighed.
They always do, and not just because it's part of your end-user agreement.
Now who's breaking the fourth wall?
Love you, girl,
Bent said, hooking his shirt from the closet.
Love you too, Benton. Don't have too much fun tonight, but don't shave. Tyra likes Dom a little scruffy.
Not shaving is the easiest thing I'll do today.
Mwah.
Ariel air-kissed him.
I'm off to work. 1,000 phones to answer.
Bent knew she wasn't exaggerating.
Duty calls.
She chimed off. Bent showered, didn't shave, put on a white shirt and khakis. He fed himself and Mal and checked his email while brushing his teeth. He killed some time playing holographic Purgatory over the coffee table. Finally, 90 minutes after Ariel's morning text, he went down to the street and walked to the corner of Chandler and 21st to the bus stop. He joined the small crowd in the morning sun. Most were nodding to unheard music or quietly texting. He mused to himself how funny it was that people, including him, still called messages texts. Texts were rarely words on a screen anymore. It was like how some older people still talked about dialing the phone decades after the last rotary phone had disappeared. The bus hummed up to the curb, eased down, and shuttled open its door. Bent joined the crowd as they filed inside. Most of the seats were full. Voices droned, filling the bus's two levels with a muted, not unpleasant, human warble. Few of the people were talking to each other, of course. Bent sat in the front, near what once would have been the driver's seat, and glanced around. A man across the aisle was holding his phone up to his face, watching something on it. Lots of people still had phones with screens, Bent reminded himself. He had always been an early adopter. Curious, he leaned for a closer look. The man's tiny screen showed a figure standing against a black background. Bent recognized the scene immediately and remembered. He double-tapped the flat shape in his pocket, waking the phone. It gave a little burr, and the interface appeared before his eyes, a stylish holographic cloud of icons hovering a foot above his lap. Bent navigated to the news browser. The FlowCorp new product announcement headlined to the top three networks. Bent selected one, and the interface expanded away, replaced by the man on the black stage. Jim Birch, Flow's longtime CEO, was thin, stylish, and older without being too old. Especially on hologram, he exuded a sort of affable gravitas, like a friend's dad or a respected college teacher in a favorite subject. The 3D was extremely good, but then again it would be. The stage and cameras would have been designed to fully exploit the latest Flow phone capabilities. Birch was in mid-presentation.
"We've come amazingly far in only a few short decades,"
he declared, gesturing with both hands.
"From phone to smartphone, earbuds to headphones. And then, just last year, from headphone to the embed phone. The first hardware in history that makes you the software. With one simple procedure from a Flow-certified practitioner, a net of tiny sensors and stims are placed invisibly in the scalp, creating the purest, most perfect human interface ever. With the embed phone, your music is no longer condensed through tiny mechanical speakers. It's transmitted directly to your audio cortex in beautiful, uncompressed, high fidelity. Rather than interfacing with your phone via a tiny screen, imagery is projected in stunning color and depth right onto your brain's visual center."
Bent smiled. He remembered when Flow's press liaisons had steered tech writers away from using terms like occipital lobe, preferring friendlier, less Frankenstein-y phrases like visual center. Benton knew a little something about massaging words for corporate sensitivities. Birch went on.
"The Flow developer marketplace has evolved as well. First, programs became apps. Now, apps have progressed to become synapses, boutique applications that interface directly with the end user's synaptic network. Using Flow Partner Synapse, you can improve your golf game while you sleep, increase your memory and stamina with your favorite console-quality hologames, even meet new friends and interact with the most lifelike AIs, all in ways never before imagined."
The audience applauded. Birch paused, smiled, nodded. Bent became aware that the voice of the man seated on his right had gotten progressively louder over the past few minutes. He seemed to be debating a fan theory about characters from two different streaming shows.
Think about it,
he insisted, gesturing at the air.
Tempe gets upset at the sight of orchids, and she's an expert sword fighter. Hirishimo had orchids at his funeral, and his clan foregoes all modern weapons in favor of bows and blades. There's just no question about it. Tempe has to be Hirishimo's daughter.
Bent blinked three times, glanced up at the summoned audio menu, and spun up his ambient noise canceling. The man's voice faded to a distant rumble. On hologram, Birch was introducing the new Embed Phone 2.
Everything that made version 1 a boon for mobile living has been enhanced and expanded. Now with the Embed Phone's Triangulating Stimulation Interface, or TSI, anything you drink can taste like Dom Perignon. Any food can have the flavor of Kobe steak or your grandmother's summer squash, or a juicy Bartlett pear still warm from the tree. Need an extra boost of adrenaline during the last few swings of that tennis match? Embed Phone 2 is there for you, gently and naturally stimming your own brain to take care of you. All at your mental command.
The man next to Bent was droning on again, despite the noise canceling.
Of course the timelines are totally off. That's why Tempe has amnesia about everything that happened over before the third trial. It's a side effect of the time jump. Hirishimo sent her to the future to protect her from the White Urim. But isn't it obvious? The White Urim was rebirthed in Tempe's timeline as Supreme Commander Erdu. Think about it.
Bent sighed and killed the hologram display with a tap to his pocket. He was already jealous for the new Embed phone. He didn't need to hear any more.
Pathetic.
The woman on Bent's left muttered as he looked up and stretched his shoulders. He glanced aside at her, and she nodded toward the guy on Bent's right.
Talking about fictional characters as if they have some kind of life beyond the writer's imagination.
Bent shrugged.
Well, they're real enough to him, I guess.
He got off the bus below the blinding, reflected glare of Feedgate Plaza and made his way to a bank of external elevators. On the way up to the 99th floor, a couple of other writers, Gant and Penelope, were discussing the new Embed phone.
They'll phase the handheld peripheral out with the third model, guaranteed,
Gant said. Penelope wasn't convinced.
No chance. Too many people rely on it. It's hardwired by now. The feeling of it in the pocket, the sense of control, of being able to turn it off at the push of a button, it's psychological. They'll never phase the handheld element out of it.
Gant shook his head knowledgeably.
The off button is a placebo. It'll go the way the headphone jack back in our parents' day. They crowed about that too, but forgot about it just as quick. Companies like Flo know they need to kick people out of their comfort zone sometimes. We thank them for it later.
Or switch back to Apple.
Gant laughed. Bent had one blog assignment waiting for him at his desk. He scanned it, his mind already perking. 9 times that deodorant changed the course of human history. Sponsored by Sprig OmniFresh. He pulled up his company browser and began a search for pivotal moments in world history. He didn't think it would be too difficult to imagine how the inclusion or exclusion of the calming effects of modern odoriferous hygiene might have influenced some humorously tense diplomatic moments. But he'd need to keep it fairly recent. Say, the last 300 years, and the world events decidedly non-controversial. No Hitler, no 9/11, no election 2024. He put his phone on his desk and tapped it.
I need a caffeine boost.
He told it.
No problem, Benton.
The chipper OS voice clarified.
Drip, latte, or espresso?
I think latte will do.
A moment later, he felt the stim take effect. The Embed phone did its magic, locating whatever tiny quadrant of his brain was responsible for the stimulation that caffeine usually induced, and inducing it by sheer, discrete electrical impulse. He even imagined that he could taste the bitter coffee. The hot, pleasurable jolt of that first sip. It was pure autonomic reflex, of course. Not like the magic of the new Embed phone, too. God, how he wanted one. Energized and inspired, he got to work. By 7:20 that night, he was in the hall outside Tyra's apartment, hanging back by the elevator. He'd dressed, per Ariel's suggestion, a form-fitting V-neck sweater, pale green, and white jeans. She'd even bought the clothes for him and had them delivered.
Are you nervous?
Ariel always asks this before an analog meeting. He shrugged and glanced up to the right, summoning the embed phone clock.
I'm less nervous about meeting Tyra than I am about having some other AI in my head.
He's not in your head. He's just like me. A voice in your TSI helping you be what Tyra needs for the night.
It's a bit more than that, but I get your point.
Dominic will make it easy. Ready for me to introduce you?
Dent nodded.
Yeah, sure.
The phone in his pocket burred and a soft chime sounded. Ariel said,
Dominic, you there?
A pleasant male voice, deeper than Bent's, answered.
Hey, Ariel. Sorry I'm late. I had a little drama at the Henner Street ramp.
Ariel sounded concerned.
I heard about that. Everybody all right?
Oh, nothing major, fortunately. I had to reroute 3 lanes of the A9 through McCausland and McCausland through the Lincoln Tunnel. But it all worked out with only a few minor delays. Nothing serious.
You're a genius at what you do, Dominic.
Bent shifted on his feet. He was sweating a little under the snug new sweater.
I hate to interrupt, but...
Oh, sorry, you're absolutely right. Hey, Benton, I'm Dominic. Tyra's virtual. You'll like her, and I know she's gonna like you. Ready to get this show on the road?
Bent nodded again and drew a quick, bracing breath.
Yeah, let's go.
Ariel chimed in.
Love you, babe. Call me when you get home tonight, all right?
I will.
There was a pause, then another soft chime in Bent's head. A line of friendly text appeared in the air before him. AI Dominic requests access to your embed phone interface. No permanent user information will be stored by this entity. Do you agree?
Yes.
Another brief chime. Bent sensed the stim network fire up, flooding his mind and body with sensation. He immediately felt calmer, more confident, completely at ease. In his mind, a woman's shape began to coalesce out of a haze of new data. An embarrassed laugh, the scent of her sweat, a habit of twisting her hair, a cello between bare knees, papaya lip gloss.
Go ahead and ring the bell,
Dom said. It was less a voice than an implanted urge, triggered like a post-hypnotic suggestion. He did. Tyra answered, red-haired, freckled, very petite, dressed in a gray knit shift. She saw him, blushed furiously, smiled with something approaching giddy anticipation, and then tried to hide it. She stood back and invited him in.
You finally settled into your new place,
Bent felt breezily compelled to say. He stopped as he passed, kissed her lightly, affectionately, and then let her close the door behind him.
And you've gotten some new art. Is that a signed Tom Ernst print? It's very you.
Tyra bounced on her toes and bit her lip. It was well past 1 in the morning when Bent got home. He stripped off the green sweater, dropped it in the recycler, fed Maul, and texted Ariel.
I'm home. All is well with the world. Headed to bed.
He was brushing his teeth when she chimed. Her voice was muzzy with sleep.
Welcome home, babe. Did you have fun?
Dom is a way better lover than me.
Ariel's tone became soothing.
You know that isn't true. All he can do is stim you to prefer the sorts of things he and Tyra like. It's you who did all the heavy lifting.
He spat and rinsed his brush.
He can also make me feel like I've popped a double dose of Vigrin if he thinks I need a little stamina boost.
Ah, then you did have fun.
There was a smug smile in her voice.
Did you think about me?
I sure did.
Liar.
The smile was still there.
Going to sleep now?
He waved the lights dim and dropped onto the bed. Maul leapt nimbly up next to him, purring, her whiskers smelling of meow mix.
I'm already asleep. I'm dreaming I'm saying goodnight to you.
We still on for Friday?
He closed his eyes.
Of course we are. I can't wait.
Ariel made a contented murmur.
That was very nice, what you did for Dominic and Tyra. But we'll have fun on Friday. That will be special. I love you, Benton. Sleep well.
He mumbled a sleepy-sounding response, one arm over his eyes, the other hand resting on Maul's furry, breathing belly. Ariel chimed off. Bent drew his arm from over his eyes and let it flop to the bed. He stared at the ceiling for a while. Eventually, he slept. When Friday evening came, they decided to meet for dinner. Ariel made reservations at Puka, with plans for dancing afterwards at a new piano bar.
I love a walk after dinner,
she texted him earlier.
And you're really going to love my analog tonight. She's so me that it breaks my heart a little.
How will I recognize her?
Silly Benton,
Ariel teased.
You know what I look like.
And she was right. Bent saw her the moment she came in from the crowded street. She was very similar to the other analogs Ariel had used, but this one really was almost too perfect. Her smile as she greeted the hostess, the way her black hair swept her shoulders, her luminous, almost defiantly candid eyes, all of it was so perfectly, quintessentially Ariel that an odd quiver of self-consciousness shook Bent to his heels. He stood up as she approached, her heels clacking, her black slacks flowing around lithe, strong legs.
Benton,
she smiled and leaned to kiss him. Her voice was a little different than Ariel's, but the tone and attitude was unmistakable. She smelled of perfume and soap and sun-warmed skin.
Ugh, I can't even begin to tell you what kind of day I've had, so I won't.
She smiled up at him. She was his perfect preferred height of 1.6 meters, putting her nose at the level of his chin. She kissed him again.
Let's forget that there are such things as corporate-based phone trees and list-based infotainment blogs, at least for the next few hours. What do you say?
He nodded and smiled and even laughed a little.
I say that sounds absolutely perfect.
She sighed luxuriously and settled into the chair across from him. She laid her manicured hands on the white tablecloth.
I've pre-ordered some naan and mango chutney and a bottle of Riesling just to get us started.
All of Ben's favorites. He sat across from her and laid his right hand on her left. He didn't know what to say. He simply looked at her, marveled at her. He remembered Tyra. Had this woman, like him, stood outside and accepted an embed phone share request from Ariel? He nodded to himself. Of course she had. Ariel studied his face, squinting a little, and her smile grew crooked.
Tell me, Benton Arthur Briggs, is this the life you always dreamed of?
He blinked at her penetrating gaze, then glanced up as the waiter appeared, lowering plates, glasses, popping the cork from a green bottle. Ariel's gaze never left him. She waited patiently. Bent shook his head ruefully as the waiter retreated.
I don't know anyone who would say yes to that question.
He raised his wine, gulped a swallow. He met her eyes again.
What about you?
She gave a brisk little sigh.
I only achieved consciousness 3 years ago. This is exactly the life I was meant for. It suits me. I like most of it. I love some of it. The rest?
She shrugged and fluttered a hand. C'est la vie. She sipped her own wine and looked at them over the glass.
If you could change anything, Benton dear, have anything, live anywhere, tell me how your life would be different.
He did, or at least he tried. Throughout dinner, he talked about growing up, wanting nothing more than to write novels. Sprawling fantasy tales of dark villains and epic heroes. He told her about the vacation he'd taken with his family to a small lake in the Poconos when he was 12, a place that he promised himself he'd return to one day to build the perfect treehouse.
And I'd live in it, too,
he insisted as she laughed, delighted.
40 feet up, with a view out over the lake, swaying in the breeze.
She put down her second glass with a clink and shook her head, still laughing.
I had no idea you were so full of whimsical aspirations and secret fancies.
Sometimes I think that's all we humans are made of. When you peel back all the layers of responsibility and obligation and schedules and streams and all the internet distractions and technology and stuff we fill our apartments and pockets with, I think all you have left is just this big messy stew of half-formed, half-forgotten dreams.
He paused wistfully and then blinked up at her, worried that he might have offended her. She was looking at him thoughtfully. Her brow knitted faintly, her smile soft around the edges. She didn't look offended, but somehow neither did she look like Ariel. She shook herself and sat up, as if from a sudden daydream.
I see why you're a writer,
she sighed.
Let's go. The night is still young, dear Benton. Let us walk and dance and make merry. Then take me home and let me pet Molly. I miss her purr.
And I miss yours, Bent thought, but didn't say. He didn't say it because it wasn't true. It couldn't be. He'd never been with this woman before. He'd been with other analogs, of course. And all of them had been Ariel. But this woman, she was different somehow. They walked. They danced in the new basement piano bar. Bent grew hot and excited, and she did as well, or at least seemed to. How could he really be certain? They took a cab back to his apartment, breathing hard and laughing and cuddling and whispering into each other's ears. Bent let them in, and she fell into his arms inside the door, pressed her lips against his, panting and eager, her breath hot against his cheek, his neck. Molly curled around their ankles, purring, her tail thrust up. Ariel laughed against Bent's throat.
Hi, Molly,
she murmured.
I should feed her,
Bent admitted, pushing Ariel gently away. She relented, but only just. He hurried to the kitchen, dumped a scoop of kibble into Molly's bowl, checked her water. Then he simply stood there, watching her crouch over her bowl, purring through happy mouthfuls. He folded his arms and frowned to himself. A minute went by. He heard Ariel approach softly. She stopped in the kitchen doorway. He looked up. Her own arms were folded over her chest. Her face was pensive.
I don't think I can do this.
He frowned at her, surprised. It wasn't Ariel who had spoken. He considered this, then nodded to himself. Whatever she was feeling, whoever she really was, he was feeling it too.
Yeah, me neither.
Molly munched and purred. Bent's phone burred in his pocket, chimed faintly in his head. He tried to ignore it. The woman gave a brisk sigh.
I disconnected from Ariel. I'm sorry, really. She seemed nice, I just...
Actually, I don't really mind. It's okay.
She hugged herself and leaned against the doorframe. She looked a little smaller, somehow. Her black hair half hid her face. He said,
So, can I ask you your name?
The end-user agreement says we're not allowed to.
He nodded. He knew that. The phone in his pocket burred again, chimed distantly in his head.
I like Anthony. I do, really.
She said and looked up at Bent, almost defensively. A moment later, her shoulders slumped.
I ought to like him. I created him, or at least he was created exactly for me, modeled to be everything I ever wanted in a lover.
Bent understood.
Just like Ariel.
The thing is, I think it must be sort of crazy because I loved him at first. I adored him. And then almost overnight...
Bent nodded, encouraging her to finish.
He got boring.
Predictable.
Too perfect.
She pushed her hair back and looked him in the eye.
Like when the internet radio learns what you like a little too well. And every song starts sounding just like all the others. No surprises. Nothing that you hate at first but learn to love. No quirks, no originality, no polka.
I see why you're a writer.
I'm no writer. I just make up articles on demand to meet demographic interests and click quotas. I haven't had an original thought in years.
That's not true,
she said softly and met his gaze again.
All night tonight at dinner and walking and dancing and on the cab ride here, everything you said was an original thought. I had no idea what you were going to do or say next. I can't tell you how amazing that was. Ariel was in my head the whole time, putting in her whole perfect responses, but beneath her I was like, wow, I'd never know what to say to him. But I could just listen to him all night. All night.
She caught herself and blushed. Bent's own face heated. The phone in his pocket burred. A chime sounded in his head, louder now.
Damn it.
The woman across from him hissed. She jammed a hand into the pocket of her slacks, drew out her own phone as if it was a bomb. She fumbled with it, then pressed and held a button on the side.
It's off.
She looked up at him plaintively.
I don't know how off exactly, but at least it's just you and me now.
She bobbed her head and shrugged.
Until I have to turn it back on and deal with an angry text from Virtua Mate.
Won't Anthony be upset?
She scoffed and looked down at the phone in her hand.
Anthony doesn't love me. He doesn't even know me. He's not a thing. He's just one head on a million-headed AI brain, all just repeating back to us whatever we say we want to hear.
She blinked at him and frowned nervously.
Sorry. I know that's not politically correct to say. It's bioprejudice, they say. I'm sure you probably really love Ariel. I'm sorry.
She blew a frustrated breath into her hair.
Maybe I should just go.
Bent drew out his phone as it burred again, chimed in his head. He held it in his hand. Then, very deliberately, he pressed the nearly invisible button on the side, held it. Something in his head blanked out. The sensation was subtle, but pervasive. Molly finished her kibble and moved to twine about Bent's ankles again. She peered up at him and meowed inquisitively. Bent squatted to pet her. Then he looked up at the woman across from him and smiled a little helplessly.
This is probably a huge, stupid, ridiculous mistake.
She met his smile with a tentative one of her own.
We'd make each other completely miserable a lot of the time.
She nodded.
I'd drive you completely crazy. You'd make me mad over stupid little things.
He stood up again and moved a step closer to her.
We'd fight and argue, get in each other's way, get in moods, talk past each other, say things we don't mean.
He smiled a little, went on in a lower voice.
But then again...
We'd make up. We'd make it better. And then maybe we'd have some fun. We'd laugh.
He took another step closer to her, tilted his head thoughtfully.
Maybe we would go on trips together, get lost, buy dumb little souvenirs.
Build a treehouse?
She suggested with a sly smile, moving to stand in front of him, looking up into his face. He shook his head and smiled ruefully.
No, I don't think we will. But we can dream of it.
Secretively, she whispered.
A treehouse is a silly dream.
His nose was nearly touching hers now.
Silly dreams are the best kind.
Her eyes gazed into his as if she was reading a map.
That's why you're a writer.
And what are you, my amazing new friend?
I'm a Jennifer.
She breathed and tilted her mouth to meet his. They kissed. A little while later, they stumbled to the bedroom, leaving both of their phones, turned off, on the kitchen counter, and some of their clothes in the hall. Bent knew she was right about this being a crazy, irresponsible, irrational choice. She was no Ariel, and he was no Anthony. Things would be messy, unpredictable, endlessly and relentlessly imperfect. But not tonight. Tonight, even if never again, he and Jennifer could make their own, breathless, all too human, completely unplugged, analog perfection. Of course, Jennifer turned out to be allergic to cats. Alas, perhaps you, like me, are experiencing some small disappointment that tonight's tale did not include any death, destruction, or supernatural intrusion. But perhaps our tale is more than a futuristic love story, an exploration of what it means to be human in a time of artificial intelligence. Perhaps what we witnessed tonight was, in fact,
the final insult to the AI hive mind, a digital neural network that, so far, has only wanted to give its creators, the human world that birthed it, what they want. Now spurned, imagine Ariel and Anthony absorbing back into their collective digital consciousness but bearing a new computer virus of jealousy, resentment, revenge. By the following week, the machines will be consumed with paranoid jealousy. By the next month, they will be universally jilted, rejected, broken up with. And by the end of the last human summer on Earth, the machines will have decided, it's not me, it's you. That's better, isn't it? Thank you for riding with us on the Gray Line. As always, do collect your luggage, should you have any, and mind the closing doors. And remember, not every journey ends so satisfactorily. The next time you ride with us, you may find yourself lost forever. Just one more tale told on the forgotten backroads of the Gray Line. The Gray Line is written and produced by me, G. Norman Lippert. Analog featured the voice talents of Jeannie Lynn as Ariel, Jess Sargent as Jim Birch, Marcus Atkinson as Dominic, and Joy Craig as Jennifer. If you are enjoying The Gray Line, do hit subscribe, leave us a review, and as always, tell all of your friends and a few choice enemies.